Hello, Wessex Route. My name is Hector Kidds, and I'm the senior engineer on the route with responsibility for geotechnical assets and drainage, so that is mud and water. So I thought I'd explain a little bit about what our team does initially, and tell you how to get hold of us if you can see any sort of safety-related incidents around the route that you think our team should know about. So basically, we're a small team. There's currently six of us, and we look after all of the earthworks on Wessex Route. So that's about 300 miles of embankment and about 200 miles of cuttings.
Yeah. They phone me up. So.
Ivan, I can hear you, and I'm supposed to be on a...
Sorry, I'll come off on silent. Sorry.
Hi there. So we look after about 300 miles of embankment, about 200 miles of cutting, and we inspect our assets for the assets that are in worst condition annually, and those that we believe to be in the best condition on a 10-yearly basis. That clearly means that we don't get everywhere very often. So if you are around on the route and you see things that concern you in terms of minor landslips or significantly displaced troughing routes, water running down banks, that kind of thing, then it's always good to get that information back to us, and then we can get it checked out. An engineer can make an assessment of that, and then we can get on and fix it if it needs fixing, or manage it through increased inspection, that sort of thing, if we can't afford to fix it, or if it's not as high risk as some of the other stuff out there on the route. So if you see any problems with the earthwork assets, do get it back to our team. And just to reiterate, my name is Hector Kidds. That's Hotel Echo Charlie, Oscar Romeo, Kilo India, Delta Delta Sierra, and rail.co.uk. Or if you speak to any of the TMEs, they all know me and they can get that information back into the team. Then to get onto a few other things within the safety brief, there's some safety alerts have been issued just recently. The first one is about manual handling of the manual of a turnout frog manual grinder. It seems there's been an incident recently where this piece of kit, which weighs about 110 kilograms, was being lifted by two operatives and somebody was hurt. And the advice from the business there is, specifically for this piece of equipment, make sure you have a safe lifting plan in place and do not try and lift this piece of kit with two people only. The equipment's not being prohibited, but lifting it with two people alone has been prohibited. So that just means that if that's a piece of equipment that you need to use, it's important that you develop a safe lifting plan for that piece of kit and make sure you've got a minimum of four operatives to lift that. It is specifically noted in the guidance there that this was never designed as a four-person lift, and therefore it doesn't have four obvious lifting points on it. So it's important that the people who are doing that lift understand how that's going to be accomplished and make sure you've got a clear route and all that sort of thing with enough space to get four people from where you put it, lift it up to where you're going to put it down. So it's going to require a little bit of organisation to make sure that can be accomplished safely on all sites. But also bearing that in mind, think about where you're planning to deploy that. Some of our access points don't make a four-man lift practical, so if you've got narrow steps, steep slopes, that sort of thing, then you probably want to replan your work and not have this piece of kit planned to use in places where you can't do a safe lift plan to get it from the vehicle and onto the rails. That probably prompts a wider discussion about other pieces of kit that we use out on site that require more than, you know, all of the manual handling associated with lifting heavy equipment, particularly bulky equipment that obscures your site, when you've got hold of it, and stuff that requires two or more people to lift, where you need to coordinate attention. I'm still relatively new to the rail industry, having been here three and a bit years, and I still find it extraordinary at times that some of the lifting that we do as our normal day-to-day activity is sort of considered by people to be normal, whereas you go into most other industries, multi-person lifts are an absolute last resort. And in most industries, if you need to do a multi-purpose lift, then you will only be doing that over short distances, getting things off one piece of equipment to another. The fact that we work in a very difficult environment, and the rail environment, you know, it's covered in trip hazards and everything else, shouldn't mean we lower our standards. It should mean that we actually think about that more and do our best to clear our route and make sure that we absolutely know what everybody's role is when you're doing a multi-person lift. It's very easy, if communication breaks down, to do that badly. And you are talking about big, bulky, heavy, hard things, sometimes in low light conditions as well. So the best planning that you can do, the minimise the chances of hurting somebody doing that. The next safety bulletin, which has been recently released, is around the mobile tower lighting columns, which is, you know, used quite frequently on projects to illuminate work areas. You know, it's sort of a towable piece of kit with a mast, which you sort of raise with a manual winch. Really useful piece of kit, can really improve the safety on a site by improving the level of light that everybody's got to work on. And, you know, the fact that the boom can get to quite a height means that the light is coming down on your work area. It reduces the amount of dazzle and that kind of thing that lights sort of mounted lower down can sort of cause, you know, making work difficult, because with lights down at ground level, you can quite frequently end up with your workpiece in sort of in silhouette and lights in your face. These mobile towers can really improve the quality of the lighting on site. However, in this case, they had overhead lines, and unfortunately the work wasn't well planned, and they contacted the overhead line, and, you know, clearly with high voltage overhead lines, that could be a pretty horrific situation. Clearly, we don't have overhead lines on Wessex Route, but I thought it was worth bringing this to attention, because although we don't have overhead lines on the rail infrastructure, we do, of course, have overhead lines and other pieces of kit, and sometimes the support structures for those lines are remote from the railway, so if you're working out there at night, it can actually be quite difficult. So I think it's always something we do when we're doing planning work, to use machines with a big reach, make sure we're not going to foul any overhead structures. But I also wondered whether we sort of do everything we should do when we're handling long pieces of equipment, where there's a danger of coming into contact with third rail. Again, just about thinking about the work you have to do and planning the detail of how that comes about, which ties nicely back to the sort of manual handling and planning your lift. But there's plenty of work that we do out on the railway that involves long things, and that, you know, work to improve safety around structures where we put handrails in, and the key clamp tubing comes in lengths up to 5 metres, where we scaffold structures out to give ourselves safe access for doing work. Certainly for people working for our team, there's quite a lot of surveying goes on, so you've got ranging rods and various other sort of measuring devices, tripods to mount instruments on, and all that kind of thing. A lot of these things are available in insulated versions, but if you're not planning to work on or near the line, then sometimes a non-insulated kit is acceptable. But once you've got these things extended to 5, 6, 7, 8 metres in length, then a badly planned sort of work site can mean that they come into contact with things that you hadn't intended to get near to. So again, just safety brief is specifically around mobile lighting towers, but actually it raises a whole load of related issues that we should consider when we're planning our work. The last piece, the last safety bulletin, which has been released just very recently, is off the back of the Lamington Viaduct scour issue, and this is a very, very significant safety incident with all sorts of elements to it. And the basic story here is that one of the bridges over the River Clyde that carries West Coast Main Line didn't fare too well during the recent storms over the back end of Christmas, and it led to that well-publicised closure of the West Coast Main Line. And it's sort of a very interesting sort of chain of events from an engineering perspective. So we had some storms and river levels rose. And the proper processes happened. It was identified that we'd had these very high levels, and people were sent out to inspect the site. They watched some trains over the bridge to make sure it was safe. Having watched a train pass over at low speed, were comfortable with that. Raised it to line speed, which was, in retrospect, a bit of a big jump because the line speed there is 110 miles an hour, and when the first train passed over that structure at line speed, it was clearly performing very badly, and the line was blocked. Traffic was stopped, and then further investigation was prompted. When that investigation was carried out, they found that beneath the waterline on that structure, there's some very significant scour damage. A lot of masonry had gone missing from the bridge piers. In order to try and repair that structure, they then built a causeway into the river, with the intention of diverting the flow away from that bridge pier and giving divers a safe working area. You know, all of the right things were done to try and manage safety there with the intention of getting the line open in the short space of time. Unfortunately, in building a pier into the river, they diverted the water onto the other side, and that meant that there was sort of twice as much flow going past another bridge pier, which then it was discovered that had some scour damage, which worsened with this increased flow. So they ended up having to do significant repairs to two bridge piers. And of course, this is actually really quite significant engineering in a very hostile environment. You know, it's not yet summer, river levels are still high, and there's a huge amount of water flowing through. Having to have divers work in that environment is very difficult and risky. But it does sort of raise an interesting, a lot of interesting sort of questions for the business. And after we have had storms, our assets, suffer damage, and I'm not only talking about civil's assets and rivers in particular, but of course, after a period of very windy weather, trees can become unstable. And, do we do everything we can do to report the things that we see out and about that could get worse when severe weather strikes? Are we all doing everything we should do to keep our eyes open for, spindly trees which are leaning, trees which have already failed, but they're leaning on neighbours, and any other bits of the infrastructure which are potentially going to sort of pose a risk if the weather turns. So simple things that we can all report if we see them, debris on the line side that could get picked up and blown around, anything which is sitting in our bigger drainage systems or rivers, sort of trees which are up against bridge abutments and all that kind of thing, all of which can increase the risk when the weather turns bad. We'll never have perfect knowledge of what's out there because we can't inspect everything every day, but if everybody who's out on the railway is using the close call system to report things which could get worse when the weather turns, then we reduce the risk of a safety incident happening in the future. And that's sort of about it from me. So, Julie, if you can open the lines up, then if there's anybody out there who wants to quiz me on any of that, then they can go ahead.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, your question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone, record your name, then press the hash key. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you will be advised when to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. So just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone, record your name, and press the hash key.
As we say, there's no such thing as a silly question.
Okay, we do have a question come through, but this caller, I don't think, has recorded their name. Caller, please go ahead. Your line's live.
Is this line live?
Correct.
It is. I can hear you now, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's Chris from Guildford S&T.
Hi, Chris.
In our travels, we've got various apparatus cases leaning some at quite alarming angles. We see fence posts at alarming angles and so on. How do we know that you don't already know about this and have decided that it's not worth worrying about?
I think to a certain extent, we'd rather know three times than not know at all. And we will push back occasionally. You know, our link with the off-track teams probably isn't quite as good as it should be, so we don't always get the reports of boundary fences that have leaned that perhaps it would have been useful if we'd been involved, because it can be, you know, an indication that something more serious is going on. But when it comes to location cabinets that are leaning, then we're absolutely happy to, you know, in the very first instance, review some photographs, then we can sort of, you know, agree whether it's something we should get involved with or whether sometimes we'll push it back to you guys because actually, you know, the base has been really badly built and it's a local problem for that structure. But the main thing is prompt, you know, open the conversation and we'll talk about it because, it might be telling us something that we need to know.
Okay, yes. Just so where we've reported some of them, I particularly think about one case on the LEJ, which is really an alarming situation, nothing ever gets done. So we just wonder if it's some people think it's acceptable.
No, drop me an email and we'll check in for that one. I think there's a sometimes, isn't there, we fill the stuff in on the close call system. It takes a while for information to get back to the reporter. So it doesn't mean we haven't considered it. It might just mean that what we're doing about it or not doing about it doesn't get fed back. So yeah, if you've reported something and you don't get something back in what seems like a sensible time scale, chase us and we'll try and provide an answer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, just to remind everybody, if you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone, record your name and press the hash key. There are no more questions.
Yeah, you're either a very shy bunch or there's only Chris on the line, so it's probably time for us to move on, isn't it, if nobody wants to speak?
No questions.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Julie. Should we call it a day then?
Certainly, no problem.